We tried to learn that song over at Nixa for a while, and Reba Lee and I decided, since we sat pretty close to each other, that we didn't have much of a measure of time on that one. But good morning, and it's good for me to be here with you. I've been assigned a topic, and part of it is on the board or on the screen. And I want to, just so you know exactly what I'm supposed to be talking about, and so it keeps me on track as well. I want to make sure you know. Well, the Bible is full of stories about individuals that provided support to others. In many cases, these individuals are not named. But the work they did was essential to carrying out the plan that God had in mind. Today, as well, many people provide service in the background. They don't get recognition. They don't get their name up in lights. But it's stuff that has to be done. In the next half hour, you'll need to set your watches back about 4 minutes, because I'm supposed to have a half hour. We're going to explore three groups of unsung heroes that are talked about in the Bible. We're going to learn what they did and what we can learn from them and why it's important for us to provide this same kind of service today. We also need to keep in mind that although others may not see or hear about or know about the things that we do, God knows. That's what's really important. Well, several years ago, somebody told me, if you want to know something about something, just Google it. And further, he said, if you want to find something about somebody, just put their name in Google search, and you can find out a lot of stuff about them too. Now, I suppose it's with Facebook. You can probably get in and see anything that you want to know about different people if you friend them. Well, I couldn't wait, and this was a long time ago. I had a roommate in college, and it was on the verge of personal computers to where he'd bring back to the dorm room a program, and it was a stack of punch cards. And each little card was a bit of information, I suppose. I understand it just as well now as I did then. Well, needless to say, I couldn't wait to get my chance to Google you-know-who, me. And it really wasn't that exciting at all. And I thought that was rather amusing, considering all the real important things that I think I do every day. But well, there's a chance that most of you are a lot like me. We don't get much respect. And I think I've blown through about my first slide, but I'll get back onto that here in a second. When we look at those 16 names that are listed in what many, in Hebrews the 11th chapter, what many people refer to as God's Hall of Faith, we think about how awesome it may have been if our name was written somewhere. If we lived back in those times, would we have been worthy of having our name written in that 11th chapter of Hebrews? I sort of stand in awe and think about, I couldn't do something like that. You probably the same way. For those were trying times, and the persecution and the problems that everybody had in trying to get things done, it probably wasn't that fun to get your name put in there. But for as many names as are listed in Hebrews 11th chapter, there's many others that are referenced, but their names aren't there. The things that they did, it's in there. But we sort of have to guess a little bit or research a little bit of who may be being talked about. Well, there's one example in particular I want to draw your attention to in Hebrews, the 11th chapter and the 30th verse. And it says, "By faith the walls of Jericho fell down after they were encircled for 7 days." And we remember the story as told in Joshua 6. And there it is. I like to use PowerPoint on some of these bigger verses because it keeps your mind up here. And because I've got a friend named Bob that when he starts getting in his Bible that he gets off track and he reads farther, and then 5 minutes later he comes up for air and say, "Where are we?" Well, we remember that story. These men were to simply march around that city of Jericho. And they were to do that one time each day for 6 days. And on the seventh day, they were to go around 7 times. And then the priests were going to blow the ram's horn. And they were going to shout. And then this was all going to happen. And so God tells Joshua about this. And Joshua brings the people together. And he tells them, "We're going to take Jericho." And they go, "Great, Joshua, what's your plan? What's your strategy? How are we going to do this?" They were ready to take on the world. They had been waiting to get into the promised land, and they were men of war, and things were going to happen. And Joshua says, "Well, we're going to march around that city. That's what we're going to do." But Joshua told them something else. And he didn't tell them the whole story as far as what my research did. He told them, "I don't want you to make any noise. I want you to be quiet until I tell you to shout. Then I want you to shout." That's what they knew. And they may not have quite understood what the strategy was there. We understand that God was wanting the glory for this victory. He sent the ark with the priests, with the men, and they marched around. God already said, I've given you the victory. If you'll do what I tell you to do, you'll have the city. Well, day one, nothing. Well, they marched around the city. Day two, they marched around the city. And on and on. And I can just see these men of war coming back to their tent at night and their children getting on their lap and saying, "Hey, Daddy, what'd you do in the war today?" "Well, we marched around the city." "Way to go, Dad. That sounds great. Did you do any fighting?" No. "Well, why are you walking around the city like that? Why don't you go fight?" "Well, we're doing what Joshua told us to do." "All right. But, Dad, what are you going to do tomorrow? Are you going to fight somebody?" "I think it's your bedtime." Things may not have been exactly the way those men thought it was going to be. How many times in our life do things not go exactly the way we think they're supposed to go? Are we going to trust in the Lord? Are we going to trust in ourselves? Are we going to do it His way? Or are we going to do it our way? Well, there's a lot of head scratching going on right then, I'm pretty sure. But those... we know what happened on the seventh day, and those men, those patient, obedient, disciplined, dedicated men who did exactly what Joshua told them to do, they got the victory, didn't they? God gave them the victory, and that's the way it was. The walls of Jericho fell down. How many of those faithful men that fought in that battle of Jericho were named in the 11th chapter of Hebrews, or even in the Bible anywhere? There were none. Was Joshua named their big leader? That man that had so much faith when all the other spies, except him and Caleb, said, "We can take it"? He had all that faith. Did he get named? No, he's not named. Was it unsung service? Maybe not for Joshua. Sounds like for those men, they didn't get much recognition. But I can tell you that even if one person in Joshua's army would not have done what they were supposed to do, that they would not have had the faith, that victory probably wouldn't have happened. And the reason I say that is if we remember what happened at the next battle at Ai, when there was one man out of sync, because he had taken of the accursed thing at that battle of Jericho, and there was sin in the camp. Did they get that victory? No, they didn't. One man threw the whole thing off. I wonder when we look at our life and we think, well, yeah, I didn't have too good of a day today. I didn't do exactly what I was supposed to do, but I sure expect the Lord to continue to bless me and listen to my prayers and be with my family and help me keep the possessions that I have. But I'm not going to do exactly what He wants me to do. Not all the time. Most of the time I will. I'm pretty good at that most of the time thing. But that was one man. And it caused lots of problems. Well, you know, there's a lot of unsung service that we all do. If you're a mom, you're the cook and the laundromat and the cabbie and the nurse. You do all those things. And especially when your children are young, you don't get any reward for that, do you? You might get a little thank you if you press it out of them. Now, what do you say? Oh, thank you. How about you dads? The one that had to give up all his toys so the kids can have theirs. You go to work and you do all these things day after day after day. You don't seem to get any appreciation. You just work your fingers to the bone. Because you're supposed to. Because everybody expects you to. That's what I do. Even the children, you're not free from that. You clean up your room, you clean out the garage, you take out the trash, you mow the yard. You expect to get paid for it. Sometimes you don't. We didn't used to get paid for it. I woke up with a stiff neck one morning. My dad was a doctor. And I said, "Oh, Dad, I've got a bad neck." And I said, "So I'm not going to be able to do anything today." And he says, "You have your mother bring you into the clinic this morning when she comes. She come about 9 o'clock." And he did, and I thought, "All right, my dad is going to fix me up. He's going to give me a pill, or he's going to put me on the table, and he's going to do something for me." Yeah, I got there and the lawnmower was sitting out. He said, "Here, you mow that yard and you look behind you and you be careful." You know, by the time I got done mowing that yard a couple hours later, I didn't have a stiff neck anymore. But you know, it's unsung service. Somebody's got to do it. We have to do it. It needs to be done. A lot of things need to be done around the church, don't they? It takes a lot of work to make things click along like they are this morning. Everybody has to do their part. Even somebody has to be there to listen. If I've already done this lesson at home by myself with nobody listening to me, if nobody's here, I don't need to do it again, do I? I've got to have you out there. So thanks for coming. So who does the stuff around the church? Well, in a perfect world, everybody pitches in and does their part. Do we live in a perfect world? We don't. And everybody doesn't chip in and do their part either. There are certain ones that do the bulk of the work that needs to be done. Well, let's remember what Romans 15, 1 through 3 says. "We then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak and not please ourselves. Let every one of us please his neighbor for his good to edification, for even Christ pleased not himself." But does that let the weaker off the hook? Do you just sit there? It's sort of like saying, "I'm going to sin that grace may abound. I'm going to sit back so those others can do all the work." For those of you that aren't elders, and even for those of you that are, do you think it's a pretty good job? Do you think it's fun when you ask somebody to do something and they say, "Oh, I don't believe I can. No, you better ask somebody else. I don't think I can do that. No, that I don't know how to do that. Let me put you on the spot and ask you, what about going up to your elders and saying, I just want you to know that if there's anything that you need done, I'm your man. I'm volunteering. You know, as soon as the smelling salts take effect and your elders get revived, you're going to find something to do. You're going to be on the list. Now, that'd be in a perfect world. Can you sit there and say, yes, I do that? I go to my elders and I say, I want to help. Let me know if there's something you want me to do. What would Joshua's life as a leader been if people would have come to him and said, you know, I got a sore knee today and I'm going to have to stay in, or I got a little sore throat and I don't believe I'm going to be able to go to war today, or I've got quite a bit on my plate right now, I've got things to do, my wife wanted me to stay home today. You think that think he'd gotten along very well? You think they'd have taken that city? First Peter 5 and 5 tells the younger people to submit yourself to your elders. Luke 17 and 10 says, a servant should have the attitude of, I'm just doing what I'm supposed to do. I'm not doing anything special. Is that what we do? Are we willing to submit and serve? Or are we full of excuses? The Bible in Matthew, the 25th chapter, one of my favorite chapters, tells a parable of a man giving his three servants various talents. Let me ask you a question. You probably know that parable. Do you honestly feel that God gave you no talent whatsoever? That He gave five and two and one, and maybe you just got zero. Are you willing to use the talent that you have? Are you doing what you can? Maybe not as much as somebody else. Or do you make excuses about why you can't? There's that old question, what if everybody was just like you or me? What would things be like? Let's take a look at another example. In Mark, the second chapter, verses 1 through 5, we find another example of those that did a golden deed, but their names aren't recorded in the Bible. And I put this up there so you can sort of stay focused on what we're doing. So you have the... you have all the verses and what happened. The word was out that Jesus was in Capernaum, and many, many more than a lot of people may have realized, came to see and hear Him. And there were four men that came to Jesus carrying a paralyzed man. And through the roof was the only way to get that man to see Jesus. And it had to be quite a spectacle. It might even have been a little amusing, if it hadn't have been such a serious thing, to be sitting in this house and imagine it, if the roof started coming apart now and here comes a man lowered down in front of Jesus. They didn't have to say anything. We know Jesus is all-knowing. He could see the determination on their face. I don't know the exact plan that these men had to come up with, but they had to have some kind of plan to get this done. And they had to go with the flow a little bit, too, because everything wasn't exactly like they may have thought it was going to be when they got there. To carry him that far, the crowd, once they got there, going up on the roof, saying, what are we going to do now? Just go home? No. And then how did they lower him down there? I don't know. Somebody said, hey, who's got some rope on him? They probably had to find a way to get this all done. What I am fairly certain of is that they had these kind of ideas in their mind, and this was their plan. They saw the need for someone to come to Jesus. And they believed that Jesus could do what they had heard He could do. They obviously had to sacrifice and work to get the job done. They didn't give up just because things didn't go exactly like they had planned. They did their best and they did what they could. Do we say that? Do we do our best and do we do what we can? I think those five steps that I'm giving you right there are similar to a day in a Christian's life and the plan that we have to have. And if we're going to bring someone to Jesus, we're going to have to follow some steps similar to these. But we're going to have to be determined and dedicated to do that. I wonder how many excuses we come up with. I wonder how much doubt we let come into our mind that tells us that we can't do something. What's your commitment level to bring someone to Jesus? Is that even one of your main goals in life? I did a lesson one time on, it's not all about you. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 9 and 19, I have made myself a servant to all that I might win the more. Do we think we can't do our part? Do we think we're too busy? Do we think we have too much of our own stuff to do? Are we afraid it might require a little extra work? It was because of their faith that Jesus did what He did. And it was because of their faith that they did what they did. Does our faith draw us higher to levels of service? Or does our lack of faith keep us from doing anything? We don't know who these four men were. Their names aren't given. And that's not important. What is important, God lets us know what's important on this, is what they did, not who they were. In the early days of the church, soon after Pentecost, we're told about a situation that's really hard for us to imagine. And I'm going to give you an example. But we're told that all who believed were together and had all things in common and sold their possessions and goods and divided them among all as anyone had need. And if you go over to Acts, the 4th chapter, the 32nd verse, for a couple verses, it expounds on that a little bit, and it says, for all who were possessors of land or houses sold them and brought the proceeds and gave to the apostles, and it was distributed to those that had need. Mike had about 100 people out to his house last night. I think we were all of one mind and one accord. Let's say, since we were, we decided to stay because we had all things in common. And Mike, he's going to take care of us. And anybody else that may entertain and have company over to their place sometimes, put yourself in this position. So what's going to happen? I didn't have but about $30 on me. I'm not going to last very long. Mike gets up this morning and gets ready for church. He said, Linda, I'm going to be selling some cows tomorrow. Because I've got to take care of these people. I've got stuff and they don't have much. And then next week I'm going to have to put the back 40 up for sale because we're going to need more because this is going to take something. And through a course of a period of time, all these hard-earned assets that Mike might have mentioned in his table talk, he's going to sell them so he can give to those that don't have. Now, that's sort of mind-boggling to us, isn't it? But you know, as wonderful as that story about all those conversions were back at that time, and all those people coming to Christ, if hospitality hadn't have been shown by those people in Jerusalem to these strangers that came in, at least Mike would have known that, oh well, I don't mind helping Barry out a little bit, but these were people that he didn't even know. These were strangers that came in that needed help. These people, if they wouldn't have been helped, these new Christian converts, how long do you think they would have lasted? You know, there was strife and division. There were those that heard and were baptized, but there were those that heard and didn't change or had so much stuff back home, so many things that they wouldn't give up and leave, that they weren't going to take on a new lifestyle. But these new ones that did decide to do that and stayed, if Mike wouldn't have helped them, they'd have just gone back to the way they were. Maybe not all of them. Some of them may have been convicted enough, but some of them would. They were able to survive because of the hospitality of those believers. I don't know that I can give up my possession, some of it. I can give my $30. That's not a big deal to me. Doesn't take much commitment to give up the little things in your life, does it? It's those big things. There's our example. That was the early church. Do we pattern our worship service and our lives around the early church? That's what they did. I'll just say we need to recognize people that need help, and we need to do that service to them so they can know more about Jesus. So they don't fall away if they're interested. I don't know that we must sell all of our possessions, except I do remember a man in the Bible that asked Jesus a question. And he said, sell all you have and give to the poor. Take up your cross and follow me. I'm not the judge on that. I'm not the one that's going to do that to you or me. Let me tell you a story about a young man that had him a nice shiny new car. He took his wife to the mall to do a little shopping, and instead of going in with her, he decided he'd stay out in the far end of the parking lot and buff on that car. And it wasn't very long, and he saw this man come walking across the parking lot, and he did a look at him and sort of shook his head, and he could tell he didn't have any money and he didn't have good clothes and didn't have much. Well, he says, there's a bum. And he says, this bum's going to walk up to me and he's going to ask me for some money. And I really don't want to deal with somebody like that today. He says, boy, I hope he doesn't ask me. Well, he got his wish, and the guy, the bum, didn't ask him. He went over and sat down on the curb at the bus stop waiting on a bus. After a little bit, the bum says, say, that's a fine-looking car you have there. And the young man said, well, thank you. And he moved to the other side to buff on the other side of the car because he didn't want to be too close to him. But the expected plea for money never came, so a little voice inside of that young man's head said, go ahead and ask him if he needs any help. Well, he did, but he didn't get the expected yes. He got three words that haunts him the rest of his life. For the bum said to the question, do you need any help? The bum said, don't we all? And don't we all need help? And we can be just like that young man. We don't have to give away our farm. We don't have to sell our cattle. But we can feel pretty high and mighty about the things that we have, don't we? And we don't want to part with them. We might have a hard time parting with $5 in that situation. There's so many out there that need us to ask them if they need help. And not just about money, but that they need help to come to Jesus. Let's not think that we're too good or too busy to do God's work. Maybe this man, this bum, was just a homeless stranger wandering the streets of that town. But maybe God looked down one day and pressed an angel into service, dressed him up like a bum, and said, "Get down there and minister to that young man, for he needs some help." I don't know how God works. I know He does some pretty awesome things. It's tempting with our material wealth to be stingy and cut ourselves off from another person. We take care of our own interests, and we have our own little world that we live in. And I don't think that's the way God wants us to live, not in our own little world. As part of God's spiritual family, it's our duty and responsibility to help others every way possible. God's family works best when its members work together, and that's what they did in the early church. And that's why it thrived and grew at that time. We may not get recognition from others. We may not get appreciation from others. Things that we do and the things that we say may not even get noticed by others. But one thing for sure, we can know that God knows about it. We're told to rejoice because your names are written in heaven. And how do we get our names? That's in Luke 10 and 20. How do we get our names written in heaven? Well, if we love Him and if we keep His commandments, let us do everything that He says, we get our names written in that Lamb's Book of Life. That's how you get started. Now, keeping your name in there may be a different thing. You have to do some unsung service. As we extend our invitation this morning, I want to remind you about one day in the life of Christ. A day when He met a man at Bethesda, and this man had been crippled for 38 years. And Jesus walked up to him and said, "Do you want to be made well?" That's what the New King James says. And the man replied to Jesus, "Sir, I have no man to put me in the water." Have you been waiting for a while to get in the water? Those waters of baptism? Jesus is asking the same question right now if you've never been baptized. Do you want to be made well? Now, I can get four guys and they can throw you in the water. We can get you there like those four men did at Capernaum. But that's not the way it works. You have to come. You have to want to submit yourself. Do you have that desire to do that? We don't know how long that invitation is going to be extended. As long as the time we have here on this earth, but we don't know when that's going to be. If you haven't named Jesus as your Savior, if you haven't been made well, we ask that you do that as we stand and sing.